This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
We've been joined by Dr. Richard Davis, who is the PI of the low-frequency instrument on Planck. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you.
So could you start by explaining a little bit about Planck and what its objectives are?
Well, Planck is a space telescope to observe over 9 frequency channels to map the cosmic microwave background with unprecedented resolution and sensitivity.
Am I right in saying that Planck is the third spacecraft to try and do this?
It is. The first one was COBE, and the second one was WMAP. Planck is third generation, is cryogenically cooled, has got much wider frequency range, and is much more sensitive than any previous mission.
So compared with other satellites, how sensitive is Planck?
It's about 5 times more sensitive than WMAP, but the frequency range is very much wider. And one of the problems that we have in trying to study the cosmic microwave background is these things called foregrounds, which is all the other things on the way that we have to look through. And when we first started making these measurements, the measurements were quite crude, and the foregrounds weren't too important. But as time's gone on and we get more sensitivity, so the foregrounds have become more and more important, and you've got to subtract them out. And the only way to do that is to have a very large frequency range, which the Planck satellite has.
So what has Manchester's involvement been in Planck?
With the low-frequency instrument, for many years we've been doing research in radio waves and cosmology. And we've been developing our receivers to have very, very low noise temperature, and of course they're cryogenically cooled as well. And I sort of looked at this and I thought, well, I don't know, we've got all the things necessary here at Jodrell Bank to make the receivers for the Planck satellite. So I applied to PPARC, as it was then, or STFC as it is now. I managed to win a grant for £2.5 million to enable us to build these cryogenic receivers. I was somewhat terrified at the time because the noise temperatures that were required were about 3 times lower than anything we'd achieved, and this has proved to be very, very challenging to meet the requirements of the Planck mission, which I'm happy to say we have done, and our receivers are actually the lowest noise receivers that anybody's made in the world. We worked with Marian Pospisielski, who was the designer of the receivers for the WMAP mission. He came over and worked with us. And, I saw the look in Frank Winder's eyes when Marion says, "Yes, Frank, I think your amplifiers are better than mine." And so that's been very good. And we're obviously overjoyed that we've managed to meet that specification, albeit built in what you might think are sheds in fields at Jodrell Bank in the middle of Cheshire. Don't be put off or get the wrong view of that. We've inside those buildings, we've created space environments and got things working up to the very best that you can achieve anywhere in the world.
And what are the temperatures at which these receivers operate at?
Well, the physical temperature is just under 20 Kelvin, about 18 Kelvin. But the noise, for those of you that aren't scientists, the noise temperature is not necessarily equal to the physical temperature. It can be lower or it can be higher. And in this case, we've achieved noise temperatures of around 5 to 7 Kelvin at 30 gigahertz and around 12 to 13 Kelvin at 44 gigahertz, even though their physical temperature is about 18 or 19 Kelvin.
And what frequency range will Planck be operating at?
The low-frequency instrument operates from 30 to 70 gigahertz, and the high-frequency instrument operates from 100 to 857 gigahertz. So it's a very, very wide frequency range. The high-frequency instrument doesn't work with transistors at all. It's essentially going up into the infrared, and it receives its signals with devices called bolometers, which are essentially temperature sensors, because the infrared is just heat, after all.
Can you talk a little bit about the orbit of which Planck will be put into, so the second Lagrangian point?
Right. Well, I'll try and explain the second Lagrangian point. Firstly, it's 1 million miles or 1.5 million kilometres from the Earth. So if you imagine a straight line starting on the Sun, you then pass through the Earth and continue that straight line on for a further 1 million miles. That's where L2 is. And it has the magical result that line remains straight as the Earth orbits the Sun. So it's a heliocentric orbit, so that basically the Earth and L2 orbit the Sun in the same time. The L2 orbit's got to go faster because it's got further to go. It's got to go around. It's got a bigger orbit, but it orbits at the same time. So what you do is you put your spacecraft at L2, and you can orient it such that the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun are behind you, and then you look the other way. You look out into deep, cold space, and you put solar panels on the back of your spacecraft to power it, and you put your radio transmitters to bring the data down on the back of it, and then our super, super sensitive radio astronomy receivers are put on the dark side, looking out into deep space.
So this orbit must mean that no servicing missions can go to Planck.
Absolutely. We always joke that somebody were going to put a chair on the back and somebody could fly up there with it. I did actually get one volunteer at one point. I managed to persuade this person that it wouldn't be a good idea. No, there's no servicing possible at the moment. It takes a lot of energy. You saw the size of that Ariane 5 rocket. In fact, the final stage of the Ariane 5 rocket goes out to L2 with the two spacecraft because we haven't got enough energy to stop it, and certainly to try and bring something back in again. So that we haven't got any rockets big enough to go out to L2 and come back at this stage, and it would cost a fabulous amount of money. So at the moment, L2 is you just send your stuff there and hope and pray you've got it right.
So we know that Planck is actually set to observe the cosmic microwave background. Are there any other projects of which, any science projects which Planck will be involved in?
Oh, yes. Planck only goes down to 30 gigahertz, and it turns out a lot of these foregrounds are coming in at lower frequency, and really to untangle them, we'll have to make measurements at lower frequencies, and I won't bore you with all the names, but there's lots and lots of different experiments which will be ground-based, which we can do at these lower frequencies. We don't need to go into space for the very low frequencies, which will be backing up Planck. I guess the Planck mission in terms of the cosmic microwave background and cosmology is going to be the biggest mission of the decade. We've got nothing else on the cards. Even if we started building now, I doubt whether we'd have something up for the next mission in 10 more years. So this is the big experiment of the decade, and of course it's a great relief that we've actually got up there, and I'm overjoyed that we do seem to be communicating with both the satellites. They do appear to have got up there, and they've emerged from their cocoons that they were in on the top of the rocket, and everything looks fine at this stage. For me, the terrifying day is day 25, because on day 25 that's when we switch the LFI on. So we don't really know what state the LFI is in. We know that the main communications and the main satellite's okay, but we don't know what LFI is like till day 25. And so I slept last night, but I shan't sleep the day before day 25.
How long is Planck expected to be up for and operating for?
Right, well, it takes 50 days to get to L2, and then it takes a further 40 days to calibrate. So it's after day 90, which is effectively 3 months from now, we start observing. The main mission is to observe for 1 year, but if all goes well, there's plenty of fuel on board and plenty of everything on board to run it for a further year. A survey takes 6 months, so in 6 months orbiting the Sun, you map the whole sky. So the plan is, the nominal mission is two surveys, two lots of 6 months, but there are two more planned, which will make four surveys, and there is enough fuel for yet another one. So we wait to see how well it all performs in space. So all the research agencies know this in trepidation that we, obviously while the thing's up there, we want to run it as long as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm. So we hope everything goes to plan then.
Indeed, yes.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.